Hi, this is Raven from Raven Black, and you're listening to Today's Boondoggle on Domain Cleveland.
You're listening to Today's Boondoggle with your host, the one and only Bill Bailey, on Domain Cleveland Radio.
Thank you for tuning into this week's edition of Today's Boondoggle. Domain Cleveland Entertainment is a veteran-owned and operated entertainment cornucopia of nonsensical shenanigans. You can find interesting interviews, music news, entertainment information, and just about everything else in between. Thank you again for tuning into the show here at Domain Cleveland.
What's going on, everybody? It's Bill Bailey with Today's Boondoggle on Domain Cleveland Radio. And today I got the pleasure of speaking on the phone with Mike and the from Mike LePond and the Silent Assassins, and formerly of Symphony X. How you doing, Mike?
I'm doing great. How you doing, brother?
I'm doing good. Doing real good. How have you been keeping busy during this whole COVID-19 thing we're going through?
Well, you know, it's definitely frustrating, especially for musicians. You know, I had two tours that were scheduled for April and May. I had a Symphony X tour for April. No, I'm sorry. I had a Ross the Boss tour scheduled for April, and then I had a Symphony X tour scheduled for May. And you know, they both got postponed. So kind of got hammered. So you know, I've just been home, staying home as much as I can. You know, being a musician, I'm writing songs, and I've been giving some lessons online, which is kind of hard to do, actually, because a lot of these sites, they just, you know, the sound is always cutting out, and there's always like a lag time between the two musicians, so you can't really play together. So that's kind of tough to do, but you know, I'm doing the best I can under the circumstances.
Yeah, there's nothing like that face-to-face good old human interaction, you know.
Yeah, it's you can't replace it.
So how do you where are you at right now?
I live in New Jersey.
New Jersey. And how do you feel they've been handling things up there? I mean, it was, you guys were in the news quite a bit.
Yeah, I mean, New York and New Jersey were hammered the most. You know, it's like a tough, you know, it's a tough balance, because, you know, I mean, everybody wants to get out of their house. You know, it's getting nice out now, and everybody wants to get out of their house. And, you know, so I kind of think that they're being a little too tough on the government end over here. They should, you know, let people make more of their own decisions. You know, but things are getting done, you know, things are opening up slowly. And, so, you know, that's better than nothing.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I mean, so is it just like a strange coincidence that the Whore of Babylon is arriving during a global pandemic and Bill Gates is out there pushing for everyone to get microchipped?
Yes. You know, it's funny. I didn't even put the two together till you just mentioned it, but that is, you know, the Whore of Babylon from, the Book of Revelation and Bill Gates, you know, I mean, what strange bedfellows, but, yeah, you know, so that could tie, you know, that all does tie in technically, you know.
Yeah, maybe it'll help with the marketing to help you get, since, you know, tours have been canceled, you can try and push the album.
Yes, thank you for bringing that up. That's awesome.
Yeah, no problem. Whatever I could do to help. I saw the tie-in. I mean, I'm kind of one of those conspiracy guys, you know, that in all that stuff. And you know, as I was reading a little bit more about you, I see you're a big history guy yourself.
Yeah, you know, about, well, you know, when I was in high school and college, you know, I didn't care anything about any of that stuff, history or anything like that. But about, I don't know, maybe about 10 to 15 years ago, I just started watching the History Channel, and I just got really, really into it, you know, and I just learned so much from it. And, you know, before then, I never really knew what to write about as far as lyrical content, because, you know, I never really felt comfortable with like writing about like love and girls and all that, you know, I just wasn't into it, you know. But I mean, when I was watching these epic things from history, I'm like, wow, these are the perfect lyrics for heavy metal music, you know, because they're both so big and grand and epic. And that kind of was one of the influences for me to put together some solo albums.
Great, great. And I mean, and so, that might be how some people learn, you know. You could be educating people through metal, you know.
Yeah, you know, I mean, look at Iron Maiden, right? I mean, they a lot of people learn from Iron Maiden. A lot of their lyrics deal with historical stuff and that kind of thing, and yeah, they deal with all that stuff. So yeah, you know, hopefully following in the footsteps of those masters.
Yeah, it's great. That's great. So what would you say like the direction this album goes from your last one, Pawn and Prophecy? I mean, is it kind of continuing like a similar like storytelling or whole new direction this time?
Well, it's you know, it's kind of the same formula, you know. With the first two solo albums I did, I kind of developed a formula, and you know, basically for me, each song is its own conceptual piece, and I think the only thing maybe I did differently with this album, a little bit different, is I had a little more songs this album that I actually wrote the lyrics first, which you know, I never really thought about doing that much. Sometimes I've done it, but I found that when you write the lyrics first, you can really tailor the music to what's being said in the lyrics, you know. So it's like if there's a really dark lyrical verse or something, you could really put some dark riffs to it. And if something really sad, you can, you know, tailor the music to that. So it really helped me to make each song like a little mini movie. So yeah, it was kind it was definitely more challenging, but it was a lot more fun, and I think in the end it made the album better.
Oh yeah, I'd agree. I mean, I was thinking that when you were just explaining that, I was like, yeah, it's like a movie composer. It's like, you know, some of the epic parts from some of the movies that, you know, like, you know, Star Wars or Indiana Jones and stuff like that, and the, you know, when the action's heating up and whatever, you can, the music's something that we don't forget, you know.
Yeah, it's a vital part of the movie, you know.
So I know this is probably going to be a tough one. It's like, you know, since this is like your baby, and it's like asking you to pick who your favorite child is. But if you could pick one song from the new album, you know, one message in it that you need the fans to hear, what would it be?
Yeah, you know, I think if I had to go down the album and pick what would be my favorite song, at least, you know, it's probably going to change as the months go on. But as of right now, my favorite song is track three called The Telltale Heart. And that's, you know, I mean, I love Edgar Allan Poe. I mean, who doesn't? And so I love The Telltale Heart, the story. So I tried to write a song that kind of tells the story in a heavy metal way. And it was one of those things, you know, I had these lyrics laying around for a long time, you know. Originally, I was thinking they might be used by Symphony X, but it just kind of never got used. And then, so I wanted to tackle it for a solo album. And, you know, I kind of, like we were talking about, you know, I went down the lyrics and kind of tailored the music to it. And I even do, and the spoken word part is done by me. So that was fun.
Great. When did you first get into music? Do you remember like you know, what attracted you before even you started playing? Like, were you?
Yeah. You know, I mean, when I was in junior high school, you know, the kids used to get together, and you know, they used to play on the radio. I used to hear the Beatles and the Rolling Stones on the radio, or Bad Company, or things like that. And then one day I was in my room, and the radio station came this the craziest riff I ever heard in my life. It was Black Sabbath, Iron Man. And I was like, it was like, you know, so different than anything that the radio was playing, you know? And I just was like, wow, what is that? And I want to, you know, I want to understand what that is. And then the final topping on the cake was I went to my father, God rest his soul, took me to see Kiss in New York, at Madison Square Garden.
Wow.
And I was 13, and you know, think about what you're thinking like when you're 13. So I see Gene Simmons, he's breathing fire, he's spitting blood, he's flying across the stage. I'm like, all right, I want to be like that guy, you know?
Oh yeah.
So I started learning the bass, and that's how I started to get into hard rock. And then, you know, I started to eventually get into heavier stuff, and got to where I am today.
Great. Yeah, it's funny. It reminds me, it's like Kiss is always seems to be like the gateway for a lot of people too. I remember when I was a kid around Christmas time, and I had an older sister, and she was like into like Rod Stewart and Leif Garrett and stuff like that. And she was getting like all these albums for Christmas, opening them up, and there's, you know, Rod and Leif and all that stuff. And yep. one year, somebody, I don't know who, what they were thinking, they got her Kiss Alive. And she threw the biggest fit, like, what is this? And I'm like, you know, I forget how old I was, but I seen that cover, and it was like the Holy Grail. I was like, oh, you know, and I was like, I'll take it, you know. And that was it, like blood dripping down Gene and the fire and all that stuff. It's just the gateway for sure.
Yeah, it's like they're like the new superheroes, you know.
Oh yeah, so. Yeah.
Yeah, so I totally agree. I think they were the gateway for a lot of us.
So you mentioned a little bit, like, what attracted you to the bass guitar?
Right. So, yeah, originally it started when I went to that Kiss concert, and I saw Gene Simmons, and his instrument just happened to be the bass. So I took bass for lessons for 1 year, and also I was teaching myself. My first goal when I was 13, 14 was to learn every Kiss song that was out at the time. And so I proceeded to do that, you know, and I found that I was able to learn the songs, because Gene Simmons' bass lines back in the, you know, in the 70s were actually a good training ground if you were a bass player, because they were easy enough where you could learn it, and they were melodic enough where you kind of learned how to, you know, play a little bit, and you know, you hear a chord and you know what to play within the chord, and it was kind of cool. So you know, I started with that, and then you get into the heavier stuff. I start getting into Sabbath and Priest and Maiden, and you know, I started to get into Steve Harris and Geezer Butler, and then I got into Manowar with Joey DeMeo.
Oh yeah.
And but then I also really loved Rush, you know, so Geddy Lee. And then I just kind of took all those influences and I kind of made it my own. And then I'd say recently, within the last 10 to 15 years, I started to listen to Blackmore's Night a little bit, you know, what Richie and his wife are doing. And I started to try to do what Richie was doing, but on the bass, and it kind of added another little thing to my style. So I kind of go back and forth between, you know, the hard rock, the heavy metal, and now a little bit on the folky end too.
Okay, great. And then when did you like start playing out live? Do you remember?
Sure. I remember my first gig ever. I was 16 years old. It was 1982. And I played in a heavy metal cover band that we played at some local, you know, some local place. And it wasn't a club. It was kind of just some hall. And, you know, I just loved it. You know, we were playing all these covers, you know, all our favorite covers at the time, Twisted Sister, Ozzy, you know, all this stuff. And, you know, that it was great. You know, I mean, learning covers is awesome because you get to really learn the styles of all these bass players. So it was great training ground. And, you know, playing live, it was like a drug, you know, because it felt so good. And the fan reaction, you would just feed off it, and then you want to just keep doing it. And I just kept going and going and going. And then I never really thought I would do anything further besides just play local gigs, you know. But in 1999, I was lucky enough to hook up with Symphony X. And I went from playing to like two people in a bar to playing to 1,000 people in Brazil. And it was just literally like a dream come true. I couldn't believe it. And to this day, I'm still touring all over the world, recording. And, you know, it's still surreal to me. I still can't believe that I get to do it.
Okay. So that was your official, like, real band then after the covers. And how did you connect with those guys?
Yeah, that was 1999, and I would say, yeah, that was when I turned pro, I guess. Yeah, it was interesting story. You know, here on the New Jersey rock scene, it was a pretty vibrant scene. I used to go to this one rock club every weekend, and we all would hang out and stuff. And, you know, there was, like, this guy that would always go there, you know, every weekend. And then one day he said, you know, Symphony X is looking for a bass player. You know, I think you would be perfect, because he had seen me play there many times in another band. And I didn't really know who Symphony X was, really, you know, but, you know, he told me they were signed and they were touring, and that's all I had to hear, really, you know?
Yeah.
So, he put me in touch with Michael Romeo from Symphony X. And, you know, when he sent me the album, he wanted me to learn three songs off the album. I couldn't believe what I was hearing, because these guys could play so great. And the level of playing was just off the charts. And I was really intimidated. And then but you know what? I said to myself, listen, do you want to do this or not? You know, if you don't want to do it, then just put the bass down and, you know, and just do what you got to do. But if you want to do it, then, you know, put in the time. So I practiced and practiced and practiced, and I had to learn the songs in like within 2 weeks. So on my way to the rehearsal, I could still remember, I was like, I really didn't think I was going to make it in the band, you know, 'cause I thought these guys were just too good. But I just wanted to go to the rehearsal anyway, just to tell them that, you know, I really appreciate what they do, and I think they're great, you know. But I went to the audition, and when we started playing, I noticed I was able to keep up with them, and I was like, whoa. So I started to get more confident, and then we got through all the songs, and, you know, they liked what I did. And then I had a second audition. And then, boom, I was in the band. And just like that, you know, it just kind of proved to me, it's like, you know, you definitely need lots of practice, but you also need, you got to be in the right place at the right time, you know?
Yeah, and you got to give it a shot. I mean, you almost like psyched yourself out, it sounds like,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
Thankfully, yeah. You didn't, you know?
Exactly. That's exactly right.
Like, I've heard from some of my friends in the industry when they started, like, local and stuff, and like you said, playing in front of just a handful of people, and then next thing you know, they're doing these big festivals, and hearing, like, you know, the nerves getting to you. And my buddy was telling me, throwing up, like, on the side of the stage before he went out there and stuff like that. Whoa. I mean, was there anything like that going on with you?
No, you know, it wasn't it didn't get that bad because I kind of decided to myself that I most likely wasn't going to get it, but I just wanted to meet them in person and shake their hands and tell them how good I think they are. So I guess it wasn't where there was like a, I was really scared because I didn't really think I was going to make it. But once, you know, once I got in there, you know, I think the most nervous point was when I was recording the first album for Symphony X, you know, because then it was like, okay, then this real scrutiny was on me because, you know, all those guys were going to watch me play all these parts and, you know, get through it. So that was definitely scary, but I got through that.
Yeah. But I mean, like playing in front of all of a sudden, like festivals and stuff, those size crowds.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, my very first show with them was in Brazil in front of 1,000 people. And then, you know, we did our first European festival, and those festivals, I mean, like 50,000 people. And that was like even weirder because, okay, it's one thing to be in a club, a packed club, but now it's another thing to be playing some giant festival in front of like 50,000 people. And that's just weird because it doesn't even seem like it's real. It feels like you're just in a movie. I'm like, what am I doing? Am I really on this stage? What's going on? But it was awesome. It was fantastic. So it's great.
Awesome. So what's it been like working with Michael Romeo?
Well, you know, I've learned so much about songwriting from Michael Romeo and Michael Pinella, the keyboardist. I'd say joining the band, it's made me such a better musician. You know, I mean, before I joined the band, you know, I was into, you know, Sabbath and Priest, and I was great at that stuff. But now these guys were bringing to the table totally like different scales and time signatures and stuff that I had to get up to speed on. But once I did, you know, then it was like, okay, I got it. But I probably the biggest thing I learned from them was just the art of songwriting. Different ways you could change from chord to chord, and it's just like I don't think I could have made solo albums without getting that influence, because I think the songs would have kind of sounded, a lot of them would have just sounded the same. But Symphony X just taught me so many different ways to write songs and different ways a song could go and build. So, that was something that I really, really helped me with the solo stuff.
Yeah, it's like it got you out of your comfort zone, and you know, the more it pushed you out of it, it's like your confidence would build.
Right, and they're actually the ones that introduced me to the idea of writing lyrics first and then putting music to it. You know, before then I was just like, okay, I got these riffs, now I'm just going to put some words to it, you know. But it's just, you know, definitely an eye-opening experience.
Yeah. And then you continued working with Michael with your project too then, right?
Yeah, you know, so obviously over the years we became great, great friends, and you know, Michael was nice enough to help record me with these solo albums. And you know, besides being a great, great guitar player, he's also a great engineer. So I would record all the albums in his studio, and you know, he would just kind of help me along. And you know, if he would hear something that, you know, he could hear things that maybe I'm not hearing if something's a little off. So he would help me with that. And, you know, he just really, with his help, I mean, it's made the album sound so great, you know.
Great. And then, you know, when you were putting your solo band together, how did you connect with like Alan and some of the other guys?
Sure. Well, Alan lives in New Jersey also, and he was always like on the New Jersey scene. He was always kind of a local hero, but I never really met him for real until 2010. And so we kept in touch, and you know, but I always loved his voice, and I loved his voice because he sang with a lot of power and grit. But he also sang with a lot of melody. So I was looking for someone that could combine the two. And he, you know, for me, he was perfect for that. And since he was local, he could actually, you know, I could actually be in the studio with him, and we could work together. So that was important too. So yeah, when I finally decided to do these solo albums, he was too happy to do it, really into it. And we had, you know, and he came into the studio and just, you know, did a fantastic job. What I would do is I would write the lyrics, and then I would kind of send him a demo of the song with me singing the songs. And I can't sing at all, but so he had the difficult task of making sense out of all my nonsense. And but yeah, he did a fantastic job. Lance Barnwald, the lead guitar player, I met him through Ross the Boss, because he was a close family friend of Ross, and he was a big Symphony X fan. And what impressed me about him is, you know, a young guy, only 23, but he could play lead guitar. He could shred just like all the new guys can, but he also had that old school feel. You know, he had that old school kind of feel, and he knew where to put it in. And I thought that was kind of rare that someone could be so versatile like that and appreciate the older guitar players like that. So, I, you know, I asked him to come on board, play some leads, and I love what he did a great job. So, you know, basically it's the three of us kind of like getting through it all. But, you know, definitely two great guys to have on the team.
It's great. So they've been with you for each solo album then?
Alan Tecchio has been for each solo album. Lance came aboard on the second solo album. For the first solo album, I actually had another New Jersey guy. I'm not sure if you know Metal Mike Kleischek. He played in Rob Halford's band when he had left Judas Priest. For that time, not on Fight. It's like when he just went solo and he had that band just called Halford.
Okay.
So he was with him there, and you know, obviously Mike is local too, so he did the first album. So you know, I'm lucky that there's a lot of cool rockers here in New Jersey.
Yeah, definitely. And what's the creative process usually like for you? I mean, you kind of mentioned like writing lyrics first and stuff like that, but
right.
Is there something that gets you in the zone?
Yeah, I guess it's just like if something inspires me, then, you know, something will inspire me to pick up a guitar or grab a piece of paper to write, you know? And then, you know, what I'll do is once I get all the songs written, you know, I kind of write them all in my head. I don't have a home studio. So they're all in my head, and I have the lyrics and the music. And then I'll go to my friend's studio just to demo them, you know. So I'll just play some, you know, whatever, just some quick guitar just to get it out of my head so I don't forget it. And then once I'm done with that, then I give it to Michael Romeo, and he programs the drums. And then I'll record the real guitars to that, and then the real bass to that. And then that's when I'll give Alan that music with my scratch vocals on it. And then he'll come in and sing. And then, you know, the lead guitar and the keyboard stuff we do kind of last. So, but it's been, I've been doing it that way for all the three albums. It's, and, you know, it just kind of works, you know, sometimes it takes a, you know, a lot, some albums take longer than others because, you know, I'll be on the road with Symphony X or Ross the Boss or something like that. So it just all depends. Whenever I have some downtime, you know, I do more work on that. And It's like for me, it's like a labor of love, and it's great for my soul because it just keeps me in touch with all my influences from the past, and you know, I love doing it.
Great, and you know, we've all had a lot of downtime lately, so I can imagine.
Yeah, so yeah, while we had our downtime, I wrote another album's worth of songs, so you know, then maybe that's something down the road.
Great. So you got any kind of like superstitions that, or you or any of the guys in the band before like having a great show, like, I got to make sure my shoes tied like left over right or something like that. Any of those things like a lot of the, you know, sports people have.
Right. Oh, that's an interesting question. I'm trying to think if me or any of the guys, I just, for me personally, if I'm on stage and I feel like, and you know, no, actually, no. I'm trying to think if there's anything that I have a real superstition about. Oh, okay. I try not to practice too much before I go on stage, because in my head, I don't know if I'm, you know, maybe it's true, maybe it's not. In my head, you know, I'm thinking that, you know, my fingers are just going to run out of gas. So I try to, so usually I either don't practice at all or just very, very little before I go on stage, where, you know, a lot of singers have to warm up. Michael Romeo is always warming up. So, but I just have this superstition where if I practice too much, I'm just going to run out of steam. Yeah. So I just try not to.
I can see that with your guys' playing style. It's like, you know, it's all in, you know?
Yeah, that totally explains it.
So is there any like studio beverage? If anybody shows up at your studio, it's, you know, it's the, they're always going to see like a bottle or a can of this or something.
You know, usually we're at the studio, you know, we just kind of just whatever, have water, soda, you know. On the stage for me, it's just, you know, whatever, just water. You know, our singer Russell might just take a drink before he goes on just to loosen up, or maybe our guitar player Mike just to loosen up, you know, but that's really about it. We don't have anything that we all crave and that's on our rider that we have to have at every show, you know?
Gotcha. Now, you know, we touched on it a little bit briefly earlier on, but like the importance of knowing our history. I mean, you were watching the History Channel. You got a lot of inspiration for writing this, but, it seems like, you know, a lot of in today's, you know, world, like a lot of our history seems to be forgotten, or it's, you know, somebody's offended by it or something, and, you know, we're tearing stuff down, and it's just like, but I mean, what would you, how would you, how do you feel about the importance of people knowing our history?
Oh my God, it's so important, you know. You know, history definitely should be studied by everybody. Because, you know, if you don't know your history, you're bound to repeat it. You know, history will repeat itself if nothing is done, and no one realizes the consequences of certain things in history, you know. And you know, unfortunately, there's some governments, they don't want you to know their history, you know. They don't want you to know your history. They, you know, and you'll be, they may try to change the history. So you got to go out there as an independent person, and you got to find sources of history that you trust and that you know are real, you know. But man, you know, history should be so mandatory in every grade of every school, you know. I mean, knowledge gives you such power, you know, because, you know, like I said, man, whoever don't know their history is just going to keep repeating it.
Yeah, exactly. And then I think like civics classes. Remember they used to have those classes?
Oh, my God. So it's so important to have civics classes. Yeah. And just things like that. And, I mean, and just learning stuff. It's civics class and know everything about politics, know everything about history. You know, I mean, even, you know, learn shop, even that.
yeah, exactly.
Learn how to make something, you know, give yourself as much of a fighting chance in life as you can.
Yeah, because, I mean, look at where we're at now. All these small businesses shut down. All these, you know, people that were dependent on a lot of these trades. Yeah. And now it's like we're almost back to the point where it's like we got to bring back the bartering system and set up the little villages and like, okay, this guy was good at this, so he'll be our, blacksmith or whatever, you know?
Yeah, it just makes, what's going on today just, I think, drives that point home so much, you know. So, whoever, whoever's out there listening, man, learn your history.
Yes, definitely. And then, so the new album is set to release, what, next month, correct?
Right. The official release date is June 26th on Silver Lining Music. And, this record company, I have to say, I've never been treated better in my life by any record company. They're totally behind it, and they're helping me. And, I mean, I'm terrible at social media stuff, but they're all over it. They're helping me in every way and giving me great ideas for marketing. So I'm really excited to work with them. And, I'm hoping, I think because of them, this record, really has a chance to, to just get out there the correct way.
Yeah, and let me tell you, you're not missing much from social media. I don't know how many friends and family members I've lost in the past, like, year.
Oh, yeah, bro, I hear that. Yeah.
It's going to be released from that Silver Lining, and then will people be able to... get it online and stuff like that and stream it? Will it be on Spotify and stuff like that as well? And
It's all set up to be everywhere on all the usual sites and all that stuff. And I even have my own website now, Mike LaPon's silentassassins.com, and you could pre-order the album now and pre-order some merchandise or whatever. So everything's already, even right now, it's all kind of set up. So whoever listens to your show, check it out if you can. I hope you like it.
Yeah, and they I'm one of those people that still like hard copies and stuff, so they'll be able hard copies will be available so they can check out the artwork and lyrics and all that.
Yeah, I'm just like you, man. I want to touch it. I want to smell it. Hard copies are available. So hopefully, we're hanging on with the hard copies. I don't want to ever see those things go away. I'll be devastated if hard copies go away.
It's like a library, I mean, I got all these bookshelves, and they're like, you're not going to read all these. And I'm like, well, if I ever get the opportunity, I'd like to, because, everything on technology could just go away in a heartbeat,
Yeah. And exactly, dude. I don't know how these younger fans are content with just downloading a song and be happy with that. It just, I don't understand it, I guess, because I come from a different time, but I just hope that never goes away.
I mean, it goes back to my story of seeing Kiss Alive for the first time that Christmas,
Right.
Like there's nothing like that feeling of seeing it and then opening it up and looking at the other pictures. And
It's like you're studying it, And so every time you pick up a CD or an album or something, it just brings you back to that time,
Yeah, exactly. So I got some questions I want to ask you that I ask most of my guests on here. Who would you rate as your top three musical artists?
Okay. Top three bands. Yeah, I guess I always kind of revert back, you know. So I would probably say Black Sabbath, Judas Priest, and Kiss. You know, I guess you just kind of you have that attachment. You'll always have that attachment, you know.
Yeah, I agree. Now, is there a song that you feel has inspired you in life, like a go-to whenever you've gone through like a rough time or something that you just put on and it just helps kind of bring you out of your funk?
Lately, not too much. I find, you know, Manowar has some amazing ballads and really uplifting ballads. And, you know, anytime I hear something like that from them, it really, it just, you know, puts me in a mood and empowers me. And I feel like, you know, whatever's bothering me, it can be overcome.
Great. And what's the last book you've read? Going back to speaking of books.
Sure. You know, I'm not a good reader, and for some reason, this goes back even to my high school days, I'll try to read something and my comprehension is just awful. I'll read something and then when I get to the next page, I kind of forget what I read, and then my mind just wanders, and it's just, I was never really a good reader. So usually when I'm researching material, I'll either watch a documentary, or, you know, if something's like a short story where I could get through it, you know, I'll do that. But, you know, believe me, I wish I was a better reader, and I wish I could devour all these books out there.
Yeah, I'm a lot. I can totally relate. I'm a lot the same way. Like I said, I have all these bookshelves, and then I'll start reading one book, and then I'll like lose interest right away, and I'll start another one without finishing. You know, and it's just such a pain in the ass. But
yeah, I hear you, man.
But then I'm like, but I still have them. You know, like I don't know. It's like the touch and feel, and in case I ever need to go in here and learn whatever, you know.
And it just feels good to just look at them, you know, and just have them there.
Yeah. So do you have a regular like morning ritual or routine?
Yes, I do, actually. Unlike probably most musicians, I am a morning person. And you know, a lot of people ask me, you know, they say, wow, you do so many projects, you know, how do you do them all, you know? And it's because of my morning ritual. So I'll for whatever reason, I don't know why, around 5 o'clock in the morning, I am up, and there's no way I could go back to sleep. So I get up, you know, I just make myself some coffee, and then I start practicing whatever I need to practice. You know, I have it all kind of laid out. You know, I got to record on this day, or, you know, we're going to go out on tour. So whatever songs I got to practice, I work on everything. So if you figure from like 5 o'clock in the morning to 7:30, I'm practicing, you know, and then everybody else in the house starts to wake up. But by then I'm done. So I've already done all that stuff. And then I could just do the normal stuff of the day. So, that, you know, that formula, I've been doing that for years now. I've been able to record like so many projects and just blow through them. And it just, you know, for me, it works.
And I've read like a lot, you know, in some of the other books or people that I follow for like inspiration, it's like that's like the success formula: getting up early, you knock out most of your stuff. And then when everybody else is getting up, you can, you know, enjoy your day. Unfortunately, I'm one of those people that I'm hitting snooze, you know.
Yep, like I got you, man.
I hear that so much, and I'm like, man, you know, this is what I need to do, but I just can't get myself to do it. So hopefully I'll get there eventually.
Yeah, no, I understand, man. That's cool.
So is there like a favorite place that you've ever visited?
Well, you know, God, I've been lucky enough to have played all over the world, you know, and it's like, wow. There was this city in Brazil called Manaus. And what was interesting about this place was it was like right on the Amazon River, you know? And it's like, you know, I had never, you know, you see the Amazon on TV, but you never really think you're going to see it, you know? So, you know, we go there to play and, you know, I'm in the hotel and you could just see the Amazon and it was just amazing, wow. You know? And, and it was just really, really cool. And I just had a really, really good time there. And, that was definitely a place I enjoyed a lot, you know? I definitely like, I like Italy a lot. That's a really nice place too. And there's a lot, you know, there's so many nice places out there, but sometimes you just find these places that, you know, that just, you know, they come out of a book and then you're there like the Amazon. And it was like, it was so cool. And, they had some very interesting bugs there. I will say that, but yeah, I'd probably have to say that, Manaus, Brazil.
Awesome. And then is there like three people that you can name who've like inspired you or you can credit for making you the person you are today?
That's definitely a tough question. Well, I'd say the first person that comes to my mind is my father. My father, you know, he was just like a tough guy, but I always wanted him to like me, and I always, you know, I always wanted that to happen. I wanted him to always be proud of me. So, you know, he always said to me, you know, like when we start to turn like 13, 14, and you see everybody like drinking around you and drugs and all that. And, you know, he just said to me, he goes, listen, he goes, don't do any of that stuff. It'll just mess you up in your life. Stay in school, go to college. And I was like, okay, Dad, I'll do that, because I wanted him to be proud of me. And I think that's one of the reasons I kind of basically stayed on a straight and narrow path. You know, I'm kind of a goody two shoes. But so I would definitely say my father for one. Another person that probably really shaped me, I guess, I probably have to look to music. Because that was a big, you know, obviously that became my life. So I'm going to say Gene Simmons, because he introduced me to playing the bass and getting into hard rock. Now, as far as a third, that's a very interesting one. And that's going to be a tough one to come up with. So let's see. I'm going to bog my mind here for some interesting, maybe a figure in history or something like that. No one else in my family. I mean, I really can't think of one, you know? I really can't think of a third one, but those first two, definitely.
Okay, cool. And then here's one that I get a kick out of asking the guests and get all kinds of different answers that take us back to, down memory lane. But what's, can you remember your favorite toy as a child and why?
Yeah, I was lucky enough to get a lot of toys. You know, my parents, really, spoiled me. There was this like, I don't remember the name, you know, but there was like this football game, because I was big into sports when I was young, and it was just like a metal, I guess the surface was kind of metal, and it had all these like magnets that had football players on the magnets, and when you turned it on, it would like buzz, and the magnets would kind of move.
I remember that, yeah.
And I just loved that game so much, And I remembered you used to play this game and you would try to, you know, in my own rules, you know, the you know, the running back had to not be touched by anybody and get through the line and go in for a touchdown. And I wish I remember the name of that football game, but yeah, I remember that as my favorite toy.
Okay, yeah, I remember that. I remember that one. I don't remember the name either, but I definitely remember that game.
Yeah.
And then any message that you have for our military members currently serving overseas?
I love our military, and as a proud member of the USA, I want to say thank you for all you do. Thank you for putting your lives on the line every single day so we could enjoy our freedoms with our families and just go about our business. You guys deserve everything wonderful in life. And we love you all. And thank you for your service always. And you always have my love and gratitude.
Awesome, Mike. Thank you. Man, it's been great talking to you. I got another interview I got to get ready for. I know we could probably go on and on. I got other questions and subjects we could talk about. But the new album comes out here next month, and people can go to your website to pre-order and, you know, learn more about you guys. You just send them to your website then?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, visit MikeLaPonSilentAssassins.com, and everything you need to know about ordering the record is there. And if you like classic heavy metal, give it a try.
Great, great. And can I ask you one last favor before we knock off here?
Sure.
Would you mind doing a promo ID for the radio show? Just introduce yourself and say, and you're listening to Today's Boondoggle.
Today's Boondoggle?
Yes.
Okay, you're listening to Today's Boondoggle. Okay, let me know when you're ready.
Yeah, go ahead.
Hey, everybody, this is Mike LaPon from Symphony X and Mike LaPon's Silent Assassins, and you're listening to Today's Boondoggle.
Awesome. Thanks a lot, Mike. Really appreciate it, man. Stay safe, and hopefully... you guys will be back out there soon, and when you come through Cleveland, we'll have to connect.
That sounds great, dude. All right, thanks again for everything, and have a great day.
All right, you too. Bye.
Bye-bye.
must scream or die.
Villain voices dissemble no more. I admit the horror buried in the floor. Hearken, listen, right here the evil starts. Behold the beat of the
cards.
So who was the dude who brought in his...
Dedek.
I know where you're going with
that. He brought in his cruise book, right?
His pictures that he took.
So his cruise book, he said, Mr. Box, I got a cruise book I want you to look at. I'm like, why would I want to look at your fucking cruise book? No, you want to look at this one. So he takes me into a separate classroom, and he opens up this photo album of all the chicks he banged in the Philippines. And
like a fucking serial killer. He's like, on his collection.
I was like, this is great, man. Oh, that's you too. Oh, that's awesome. Thanks very much. Really appreciate that. You can close it now. I really don't need to see anymore.
It's like, what? Didn't you say you saw him at the VA?
Yeah, he was
trying to get back there, wasn't he?
He was getting treatment down there. He was moving pretty hard.
Shocking.
And one day I'm walking through the garage.
He should register to his neighbors.
I'm walking in the garage and I look over against the iron fencing and he's got this broad man, he's pinned up and he's like, you know, they're spouting spit. And he looks over at me and goes, I had all right, Dave. You got to go. Oh my God.
Took a big breath.
Yeah.
Shit.
And thank you for listening to another story time from the VFW Hall, brought to you by Today's Boondoggle.
Thank you for tuning into this week's edition of Today's Boondoggle. Domain Cleveland Entertainment is a veteran-owned and operated entertainment cornucopia of nonsensical shenanigans. You can find interesting interviews, music news, entertainment information, and just about everything else in between. Thank you again for tuning into the show here at Domain Cleveland.